This is episode 138 of the A News Podcast, which covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchist news. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcasts@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, see you at your favorite non-sectarian anarchist site, anarchistnews.org.
From a Pebble to a Rockfall, out of issue number 3 of Phantasma magazine. For a few years, you have been living in clandestinity. How do you feel about this decision now? When I look back on the last few years, I can say in good spirits that the decision of going underground was the right one. The life that I preserved outside the prison brought me a vast number of great experiences. If one imagines time as a straight line, one's own personal movement in such a situation crisscrosses this straight line like a child's drawing. There are times where one has the feeling of being able to touch our own freedom, their own richness of ideas, and connect to their own possibilities of action. The times where one feels in the middle of life and is capable of taking an active part are the most precious sources of energy. Without these sources, such an existence on the side would be impossible. Therefore, it is essential to somehow conserve these sources, because usually the sad days don't take long to come. And when they are here, one only wants to give up, get out of this new bondage, wishing nothing else but to have around all the familiar and close people from the past, to be oneself again. Still, this is impossible, except if one takes the risk of returning. It can happen to catch oneself secretly wishing to just be the same as all the others, just to be normal with all the needs, to integrate in the gray game of a standardized world of commodities with all its gray participants. Without the preserved sources of lust for life, the gravity of this gray madness possibly would have swamped me since for a long time, and certain lines would never have begun to exist. Question. When going underground, what was the most painful thing at the beginning? Answer. One could think that the most painful thing in such a situation surely has to be the deprivation of everything loved and appreciated. In my case, it was not the conscious pain of this deprivation, but the unconscious layer that got activated. Every night I had wild nightmares, which always acted from the assumption of the context that I am on the run and therefore in a weak position. I remember that I dreamed once that the police stopped me in a supermarket and forced me to choose. Either I hand myself over to them or they will imprison a good comrade of mine for a long time because he shoplifted there before. On the conscious layer, for a long time, I wasn't really able to realize what is actually going to happen and how my life was about to convert from a skipping pebble to a falling rock. At this time, my unconscious layer was already a few steps ahead, and it stressed me very much to go to bed in the evenings, knowing that I had to give up control over how much I wanted to grapple with my situation. Question. What was emotionally charging in the phase before the decision? Response. At the beginning of my escape, everything moved in slow motion, despite constantly changing locations, people, and conversations. The time was dripping, and for example, a 3-day stay in one place felt to me like ages. It may sound paradoxical, but the situation of living day to day at the time made that I couldn't and wouldn't agonize over my future. I just appreciated every conversation, every sunbeam, and every good coffee and freedom. My mechanism of suppression was completely activated. Now, when I think back, I could hardly bring myself to the point of making a concrete decision. This meant at the time that it wasn't a conscious decision of mine to go underground, rather effectively vanishing into thin air. The decision to implement that systematic and future-oriented method developed over time and with a consistent examination of the topic. Probably one of the main indicators to really make this step was the preservation of my personal freedom. My situation allowed me to leave all possibilities open and to find if a life in clandestinity would be livable for me. On the contrary, the prison option leaves less space open and is much more definitive. Question. Were there emotional aspects that only came to the forefront after some time because they might not have had a place in the first and perhaps hectic phase? Response. Clandestinity means changing, inside as well as outside. Especially in the beginning, this change touches everything. One is at the mercy of this change. I learned little by little to handle change as a constant aspect of my life. But there were also calm periods, and in those moments, I had and have the capacity to reflect, to be clear, and to understand better my emotional self. But like I mentioned before, my situation isn't solid. It doesn't stabilize, even though it feels like it does occasionally. To have to leave places and people who on again, off again become familiar is part of the game. And like this, consistently emotional issues are piling up, which I need to find a way to deal with, also in the future. I think in such a situation, if one doesn't take the step to leave the first big deprivations behind, it will not take long to break with those which are waiting in clandestinity. Not to forget the work of permanently keeping secret one's own ego and the exhausting work of establishing a new and plausible profile, which has to be carried out in a convincing manner. Question. In the second issue of your newspaper, you speak about physical health and clandestinity. What is missing regarding emotional support? Response. There are 1,000 ways to live in clandestinity and just as many possibilities and experiences to receive or give support. Thus, emotional support depends on where and how the affected person lives, what needs the person has, and if there are other people who are committing themselves to fulfilling those needs. Personally, I do not have real experiences with the question of how difficult it is to get emotional support through official channels like therapy or such. A possibility to avoid emotional rehabilitation through words, if one isn't willing to take the risk of surrender oneself through told things, is to open up to the wide field of a body self-examination, like yoga, tai chi, or any martial arts. Also, body-focused therapies like osteopathy, craniosacral, and so on can have a positive impact on one's psyche. There still remains the question of how to avoid official channels because bureaucracy and clandestinity are quite contradictory. I think if someone in such a situation wants to have their emotional balance under control for a longer time, it is indispensable sooner or later to face these issues and to find a proper solution. Question. Is it possible to rebuild deep relationships in your current situation, to find emotional support in people in comparable ways as to your life before? Response. As I experienced it, it isn't really possible to rebuild as deep relationships as one had in the past. On the one hand, this is because one doesn't share a common past with all its ups and downs, all its adventures and dramas, which still compose the crucial zest in a consistent relationship. On the other hand, it is also due to oneself, like how well one's own personal social skills are and how well one connects them with the permanent acting that one is obligated to do. And this is one of the biggest challenges for being socially successful. One has to somehow shake off the disgust that comes from this acting and establish a positive reference to it. Not until one starts believing their own told stories does it appear authentic. And authenticity is the key for catching up socially. I don't want to say that it is impossible to rebuild equally deep relationships as in the past, but it needs a lot of time and patience. A lot. Question. Is it possible to rebuild emotional relationships? What are the difficulties? What are the methods to deal with them? Response. If by emotional relationships you mean romantic attachments or anything that goes in this direction, then it is like everything else in life. It's complicated. To be sure to not bring oneself into hot water, it is advisable to guard one's own subversive ideas and everything with it that is connected to them as a secret. However, this behavior does have far-reaching consequences, because it is a wedge between oneself and the other person, and this produces distance no matter how hard one tries to avoid it. In most cases, it isn't the fact that the other person was born yesterday and therefore it is a balancing act, a cocktail of truth and lie, which one has to serve for self-protection. I am aware that this must sound repulsive and obnoxious. For sure, there are revolutionaries on the run who meet people they trust, also a layer of affinity, and therefore it becomes possible to share more. But such a decision can't be made rashly because it could have far-reaching consequences. If one isn't ready yet to make this step, there's nothing else to do but to deal as intensively as possible with the new I. Then one can start to actively living it. What do I like? What hobbies do I have? What exciting things happened in my past? What do I hate? Sadly, censored. The logical consequence of such a situation is to start slowly to forget who one really is and what background one actually has. So we need time in which to take a break from our internal reordering and to feel that the real identity is still a revolutionary individual who aspires to subversion of the existent. Question. Are there positive emotional aspects that have emerged by going underground? Response. What for me has distinctly changed since then is the enlargement of my social capacity, both in myself and for others. Not to say that I would go now from bar to bar, getting to know new people, but I have a lot more to do with people who I wouldn't normally have encountered within a social struggle or in an area of conflict, but through other aspects of life. And because they will never get to know me as an anarchist, at least not in an outspoken way, it needs practice to always reference other layers that could possibly create meaningful associations. This brought me to discover new activities for myself that could more easily build bridges to others. Another point that strikes me as important, but that is very ambivalent at the same time, is how to handle loss. because I recognize the longer the situation of clandestinity continues, the more hardened I become. I already had to forfeit or leave behind so much in my life. I know that this doesn't suggest necessarily a healthy way of handling it. Still, I am glad that I don't fall each time again into a deep black hole, or that I have to leave again the place and the people behind me. Question: what is the role of your left behind companions, friends, and family in your current life, and what do you feel when you think of them? Response: until now, I have spoken almost only about me, and I did that very consciously, because when I think of my comrades, my friends, and my parents, I become very sad. Although they are all a part of me and will be forever, they aren't physically present in my life anymore, and I am not in theirs. And the thought that a lot of them are saddened by my absence, or even more, are deeply shocked by it, makes the whole issue way more heavy to bear. For me, as the person in this situation, clandestinity is probably less exhausting and sad than for all those great people who miss me and are worried about me. Because the imagination likes to play tricks on one's mind and paints pictures of loneliness, sorrow, and helplessness into the frame of clandestinity. And even I can paint such a picture when I read once again that a revolutionary had to go underground. Then one recognizes the failure of trying to imagine the situation, and this fosters feelings like fear, sorrow, and heartache. I also want to say that there have been also developed positive things over the last years. I have the impression that people speak and write more about the issue of clandestinity. Again and again, comrades on the run get greetings from all over the world, and references are made to their actions and contributions, be it in article, communiques, radio broadcasts, and so on. For sure, all of this is also the fruitful work of those comrades who got hit by repression, whereby one or several of their comrades had to vanish into thin air. Question: what kind of support would you like to receive from those left behind, or how would emotional support from those left behind look to you? Response: clandestinity means changing, and that also means burning one's bridges behind one. It means that the person in clandestinity has to learn to keep everything back or express it in very different ways than those that at one point meant the world to them. The person has to become invisible in this regard. And this process is very painful, because only to think of all those left behind is not even enough. However, the comrade who can maintain a certain visibility has the possibility to keep alive the people on the run by including them in the ongoing struggles, debates, and experiences, and therefore building up a mental connection of solidarity. Of course, it doesn't always have to be the case. There could be some circumstances where it could be preferable that one is not in an outspoken part of certain actions. But for me, the discussion about such questions is already an act of solidarity. As far as I'm concerned, I don't have any open wishes that affect the issue of keeping me alive. There was a public information about the local repression wave, and it originated articles and brochures that referenced what happened. Soon after that, the situation started being discussed a bit everywhere, and the greetings and encouragement through direct actions don't fade away. These demonstrations of solidarity give me strength and the feeling of being connected with people I never have seen and probably never will meet. Another concrete point is the constant support of family members through comrades, because mostly they are quite alone with that shitty situation. It doesn't get any easier to handle, given the pressure they get from the cops. What's new this week? Phantasma NR3. What is NR? October 2019, from phantasmamagazine.noblogs.org. This quote-unquote clandestine anarchist paper posts its editorial for this issue, while the rest of the PDF includes a question and answer section about living clandestinely for those looking for more on this topic. Parts of the text incognito are also enlightening, and that book is in fact both excerpted here and recommended by the authors. These are first-person accounts of life underground, and they are well worth reading. The comments on this post are super disappointing, from chatter about the logo to complaints about layout and vague language. Come on, people, WTF. It is true that this kind of writing is hard to verify, but so are the action reports we get from underreported places like Ukraine. At some point, it's always about gut checking, right? It does include a named letter from Vincenzo Vecchi, wanted in Italy, for those who like that sort of thing.
Luxury spa development sabotage, from North Shore Counter Info. Quote: recently, we quietly entered the site of a luxury spa development just north of Kingston and sabotaged several heavy machines by adding bleach to the oil tanks, thanks to Mythbusters for their tactical advice. We waited a little while for the machines to run and cycle the bleach, and now they have disappeared. We hope that the engines are permanently disabled, unquote. Now that's the kind of bricolage we like to see. Get that info and inspiration from all the places.
Distributaries, Modern Anarchism, from the Libertarian Labyrinth. The Distributaries series of entries in the Labyrinth site have been explaining the thinking behind the author's upcoming volumes on anarchist history, the genealogy of the ideas and terms folks on this site, and elsewhere too, sigh, use on the regular. The finished books will be daunting, but a fantastic resource, and if reading them makes anyone more like the author, then we will all be better for it. Quote, there is, of course, one more ardent anarchist communist who will play an absolutely vital role in this part of the study, as he will in all the others. As I've said, 1865 was not only the year of Proudhon's death, but that of Max Nettlau's birth, and the world we have been exploring in this second phase of the study will have been the world in which he grew up. At the point where we will end, Nettlau was still, by his own account, a rather narrow, intolerant anarchist communist, although his embrace of mutual toleration would come soon. Again, one of the tasks to accomplish in this volume will be to make sure that we deal with Nettlau's origins and initial contexts well enough that we are well prepared to deal with him in his increasingly complex roles in later volumes. Unquote.
From Chile, an anarchist analysis from Anarchists Worldwide via Pelothia. A news story with a trigger warning. Though the references to brutality are terse and analytical, but don't let me get distracted by pondering the meaning of trigger warnings. Soon we will all have computerized alerts before we get out of bed for all the terrible things that might be alluded to during our waking day. Nope, not going there right now. Anyway, this post is mostly a list of events, so mostly unusual or educational for the list of the tactics of the state forces, for example, shooting from behind crowds so that they run in the direction that the cops want them to go. There is some quote-unquote anarchist analysis, but it's on the level of reminding or alerting people that all state actors are treacherous, so it's solid and appropriate, but not exactly exciting. Quote, we are fully aware that all the nuances of state repression, even those that pretend to look like a kind face, are part of the counterinsurgency manual inaugurated in Algeria, strengthened by Latin American dictatorships, and continued by occupation troops in Iraq, Haiti, and other parts of the world. We know very clearly that massive and selective repression, torture, extermination, assemblies, and communications tactics of psychological warfare are not a novelty, and today we live and face them in a scenario that was never conceived as possible, to develop our daily lives and our struggle in a state of emergency with the military in the street, unquote.
Anarchist bomb attack in Donetsk, from a2day.net, a communique about an impressive, remotely detonated explosion taking out a communication tower to, quote, draw attention to the inhuman tortures in the basements of the MGB, that is, state security, unquote. The accompanying leaflet ends with, quote, the people of Donbass should go to a protest rally against tortures, or the fascist republic will be left without communication, unquote. But presumably that line is a result of confusing translation. Good for them for the technical knowledge and successfully pulling it off. And as always, thanks for translators.
Accountability, Backbone, and Change, a Protocol for Community Care. From Grow Wild, the site with the tagline, quote, navigating change and chaos through empathy, resilience, and curiosity, unquote. Which sounds great denotatively, but connotatively raises some concerns. Moving on, this is a post weighing in as a moderating force between the self-righteous on the one hand, and, on the other, a lack of any appropriate response to relationship problems at all. As someone who has paid a lot of attention to such conflicts and attempted to mediate many of them, I appreciate the author's clarity about things like nothing works for everyone, try this and see if it works for you, start small, don't make intense but vague demands, and other such caveats, especially as the author is going through their own process of healing or resolution or whatever. There are other more generalizing, or maybe more to the point, knee-jerk parts that will, for some people, distract from its helpfulness, but again, that would be true of anything dealing with something so loaded and subjective. So, despite that, a tentative thumbs up, maybe mostly because this kind of writing and thinking is still worth trying, even though it's so hard.
Catalunya and the Libertarians, conversation with Ambat about the Catalan crisis, from A. Infos. One could almost tell without the accreditation where this story comes from, somewhat from the answers in the pseudo-interview, but even more from the questions. Quote, question. Specifically, what role have workers and their class organizations played in these protests? Answer. The world of work has become very uneven. For example, the education sector and the public or civil service sector have seconded, in general, the atmosphere of protests and followed the strike. But the other sectors do not. This is due to the strong influence of the CCOO and UGT unions that refuse to summon anything in Catalonia for fear of losing strength in the rest of the state, which usually sees Catalonia as a problem, in line with the bombings of the media communication against this land. The 18-0 strike was followed by quite a few people in the services sector and in commerce, a sector that is usually poorly mobilized. This is due to the independence sympathies of not a few employers who closed doors without more. But it was also combined with workers asking for a strike. Where the strike was least noticed is in the industrial sector, where the calling unions have less weight, unquote. The first comment to this story speaks authoritatively on the situation in Catalonia and reminds some of us of at least one reason for ANews to have commenting, despite accusations of dry snitching. Multiple informed perspectives on stories and articles is a good thing. Moving on.
Rojava, the International Freedom Battalion has reactivated. From Anarchists Worldwide, a super brief note that this group has reformed and some of the groups under the umbrella. Quote, the IFB had already reformed and reorganized before the recent Turkish invasion, and the former members of the anti-fascist forces in Afrin, AFFA, are now a part of the IFB. We are now fighting alongside our Turkish, Kurdish, and internationalist comrades in the IFB in Tiltimir. Unquote. Comments call out the groups for being Marxist-Leninists and Maoists, so the only sad thing is that this was listed on Anarchists Worldwide, I guess?
Anarchist refugee Abtin Parsa harassed by cops and anti-terrorism unit from Anarchists Worldwide. A first-person account of the harassment of an Iranian anarchist immigrant in Greece. Shit's fucked up. Quote, at the moment I am under psychological harassment and followed by undercover cops, which the regime wants me, same for all of us, to be silent about, these repressions. But in our anarchy culture, being silent about state repression does not exist. So it is very clear that if the state pushes more, not only can it not silence me, I will even say it in a louder voice. Unquote.
Fighting futurity, from a pamphlet out of Down and Out Distro. Futurity is certainly an interesting set of ideas and implications. This piece reflects on some of them while fully embracing typos, sloppy writing, and bad grammar. So, the punk aesthetic? Quote, 8. Sometimes reproducing civilization implies sterilization for undesirables such as drug addicts, trans people, etc. And other times it implies forced reproduction, denial of abortion, heterosexual indoctrination in schools, assimilation of queer sexualities into reproductive logics, etc. 14. A perhaps esoteric, though nonetheless real example of the application of this force can be seen in the numerous Reddit threads and National Geographic exposés on nature's worst mothers. Panda infanticide, for example, occurs in extremely high number of pregnancies. Panda mothers regularly produce 2 infants during a pregnancy, and in this case will kill or abandon at least one. Yet we are constantly bombarded with the idea that conserving panda life is a worthwhile cause. The cute panda bastion of conservationists worldwide, bestower of great revenue to domesticators and zookeepers alike, may also provide a shining light in exposing the application of force inherent in futurority. After all, whoever heard of a force breeding program for the lichen weevil, unquote.
Yeah, I don't know. In Vishnev, anarchists attack police in memory of Zlobitsky, from a2day.net. Quote, on the night of 31st October 2019, we, the anarchists of Kyiv, attacked a police station in the town of Vishnev, Kyiv region, address 22 Balakova Street. Having found a hidden approach to the parking lot, we used Molotovs to destroy police vehicles, unquote. This action is in memory of the suicide bomber Mikhail Zlobitsky, who, a year ago, killed himself in retaliation against torture and executions by state forces.
Audio and video, the state of resistance and the struggle in Chile, an hour from the final straw. A bit of a strange episode as the sound quality of William's segments are very distorted. Sean Swain speaking on the police killing of a Tatiana Jefferson, an interview with a Canadian anarchist in Rojava, and some information from Indiana Department of Corrections Watch precede an interview with an anarchist from Chile. The audio on the Chilean anarchist side is very hard to understand as it is both distorted and pitched down. From what I could understand, though, militarized police, torture, and overall fuckery by the state abound on the streets of Chile as riots continue. Hopefully, the final straw puts out a transcript.
Anarchy Bang, introducing episode 43, Anarchist Music. 2 hours. Quote, it used to be that the anarchist space was also a cultural space. Music was a big part of that, and mostly is no longer. Why is that? Or if not, then why is the space that is about music not exactly about other aspects of the anarchist space? This week, let's talk about anarchist music and about music that appeals to anarchists. Did anarchist music end at tub thumping? Or should we take heed of anarchist music lists on Spotify?
Unquote.
Unquote. Fucker.
The Ex-Worker number 70, Radio Evasion, dispatches from Chile part 1, an hour from Crime Think. A series of 4 translated interviews from the streets of Chile, my personal favorite being a description of looting, quote, I found it beautiful. There was a comrade telling people to cover their faces because there were cameras inside. On the floor inside of the supermarket, there was a lot of beer and wine from broken bottles, and it was easy to slip, so you had to make sure to walk slowly and carefully. You sometimes recognized people and smiled and greeted at each other, and in this new and very particular situation. Most of the time, I saw an environment of solidarity. There were cases, which can happen at any moment, of places where some people were taking on the role of police, people who were perhaps not so politicized, or not so conscious of the situation. But there was a sort of self-regulation of what was happening, unquote. The episode is also available in Spanish.
Topic of the week. Make it happen here. Among trends of political polarization, the Second American Civil War is making rounds in mainstream media, alternative media, and public discourse as a fear-mongering rhetorical device. Is it merely a reflection of the anxieties that run deep through the roots of Americans' culture? That at times like these become palpable as high tension? Or does this meme also reflect alienated and desperate aspirations towards the abolition of the extant? Circulated among the far right, more often as an explicitly stated aspiration or desired horizon, and by the liberal left as a hopefully avoidable tragedy. Tragedy because of the great loss of life, but also because it would disrupt the business as usual of the technocratic management of conflict that allows for the comforts of a pacified population subject to wage slavery. At the factory, I hear folks regularly express a desire to burn it all down, blow it up, etc. There are generalized, deeply repressed desires that are touched on by the Civil War meme. We've seen it in other contexts, such as Chile recently, how bold incendiary attacks are instigators that resonate widely instead of having a chilling effect on those with the desire to result. Those popular eruptions were quickly followed by the expected repression and the cost of life inflicted by the state in response. In the realm of anarchist memes, anarchists are often guilty of implying extreme acts of violence against the existing order and then backing off from the real implications. The awkward response to actions such as those of William von Spronson are noteworthy in this regard. Meanwhile, the far right has shown time and again to follow up on their threats beyond the realm of memes. Anarchists who have insurrection in their horizon know that it's indistinguishable from civil war, that the maintenance of class society requires the constant operation of counterinsurgency, that class conflict is arguably the constant state of low-intensity domestic conflict a la civil war, that not every civil war is a revolution, but every revolution is a civil war. I'm sorry. Okay. De Kooning and the Invisible Committee have employed the language of civil war in their texts for close to 2 decades. These texts and projects are the subject of heated debate within the anarchist milieu. The main disagreements are curiously not along the lines of attack, but rather the communist, individualist, or nihilist affinities of the would-be attackers. Taking a break from dreading a second American civil war with doom and gloom, begrudgingly saying, it could happen here. Let's imagine a scenario where the anarchists, far from playing the role of the firefighters quelling the flames of far-right insurgency, are instead those mostly committed those most committed to exacerbating the underlying tensions in America to an explosive breaking point. Let's discuss how we can make it happen here. And I assume I'm talking to Mucho. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's
right. Okay. So, what are your thoughts?
Great reading. How are we going? Great topic of the week. And there's some great responses on the comment section. This has been really interesting for me, going from the outside. I'm in Northern England. And maybe we could come back to this later on. I don't know if you know. This has really generated a response on the chat as well. The IRC. Not from the usual crowd, but people have just been dropping in from who knows where with their takes on this. So it's struck a chord, and I can only, to me, that means that this is something that's like they say in the write up, you know, that is on the minds of many people. And maybe there's something, you know, maybe something subconscious there as well, something in the American psyche. From my point of view, from an outside point of view, I'm really interested to find out more of this, a bit more about this. I have been reading the comments. I would like to ask you what you've heard yourself, Aragon. And this also brings up a related topic to me, which is this kind of like far right versus anarchist kind of, you know this this is almost mainstream now. You'll hear it on the mainstream news, you know, as if these are like so diametrically, as if these are like the eternal enemies, like cats and dogs or something. The neo-Nazis versus the anarchists. But yeah, if I was to pass it back over to you for a minute, are you up to date with the comments on there?
Well, I actually try to avoid reading the comments or keeping them fresh in my mind when I have this conversation so that I can have an actual fresh conversation about what I think the topic of the week is trying to get at. And in this particular case, and this particular week, I think that the rhetoric of this sort of question is just as divisive as sort of anything else in the world. It makes way too many assumptions for my taste. But that said, this is an interesting example of an American who's sort of being a little bit smarty pants. The language is sort of a little turgid and a little bit too much more in the sort of German or French style. This doesn't sound like a regular American. This sounds like someone who's read some Du Bois and some Marx.
They were the references in there anyway, right? The Invisible Committee.
Right. Well, the Invisible Committee, of course, that makes a whole other big implication, which I actually think that this reads as a bit more class struggle than it does of the Invisible Committee line. But it's obviously someone who's read that stuff because it's recent and topical and blah, 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 blah. But so I guess what's important to say is that there is not, in fact, a second American Civil War going on, right? This is entirely in the realm of rhetoric. And you know, most of the time when people talk about this, they sort of pause and then they say, and if it did happen, we would all die. Implying that, you know, if this Civil War happened, the right wing are so festooned with weapons that they would just mow down leftists, you know, immediately. And that, of course, is my big problem here, which is that I don't want to fight on the side of the left if this Civil War happens. In fact, you know, I would run and hide in general, because there's no success. There's no situation where my team wins if there were to be a second American Civil War tomorrow.
And that's going back to, like I said, about this kind of, I mean, it's like a light versus dark idea. It's like
yeah, for sure.
Neo-Nazis on one side, and then the anarchists standing up for everything good in the world on the other side. Oh no, actually, anarchist is the wrong word there. Sorry, that would be anti-fascist. That would be the opposed. Although those two terms, for some reason, have become very closely they're used almost interchangeably amongst some people. And again, going back to the IRC, there was some quite heated conversation about this. I was able to feel quite smug throughout because I was briefly involved in like some anti-fascist action where I live, and without no exaggeration, I was younger, you know, they were literally like the Stalin fan club. So I can say, you know, I have no side. I tried to pick a side, and I was, I was in, you know, a Joseph Stalin Appreciation Society. So there was no side. I was accidentally there. There was no side. So then, yeah, when I hear even anarchists talk about, you know, we have it's like wishful thinking that there is this kind of. This opposition, you know, that our side, that we have a side that we can align with, and if we all come together, then we can stand up to these dark forces and we can win. You hear that here as well, Aragon. That's not only in the US. Civil war, this language about, you know, this real approaching, like, violent struggle between these two sides, that's very American. You would never hear anything like
that. Yeah, I mean, even your right wing, you know, the National Front-esque right wing in England, does it have a paramilitary wing at all?
No. And not to say that hasn't been violence. Of course, there has. You know, there's been some terrible violence, but no, there's no equivalent here. Or anywhere in Europe, I don't know. Maybe I'm overreaching saying that. I don't know for sure, but I've never heard of, you know, a militia outside right. of the US. I don't know. I might. Maybe there is. I really don't think there is, to be honest. Please correct me, anyone on that in the comments, if I'm wrong.
In the US, I would say that there isn't as much paramilitary action or activity as there is just a preponderance of guns.
And at some point that kind of becomes a parliament. Surely if there's enough people, you know, living in the same place with enough guns and they've all aligned themselves to the same cause and they're ready, that's a paramilitary, isn't it? I don't know. Definition, you know, it certainly looks a lot like one, you know.
It definitely it is terrifying. I mean, you know, these people are so monstrous in terms of what they think and, you know, their lack of clarity of thought that of course, like, there's real reason for concern, but you know, but it is sort of a pretty big leap conceptually between between a bunch of idiots and guns and this radical transformation of the world that we live in. It's also worth mentioning that in the US, and, you know, it's terrible to talk about red versus blue, but, you know, as someone who lives in California, my access to actually, like, those people is incredibly limited. I mean, you know, I live in a city that's 8 to 10 million people, and, you know, I don't see a pickup truck in a week. Like, in other words, all of the sort of aesthetic vernacular of the other side of the Civil War is so far away, and mostly is a rural population. You know, it's just hard to calibrate it to the kind of wishes and hopes of the anarchist militant.
Yeah, I mean, that must be quite a strange experience as an American. Like you all have the same news, you know. You all should turn the same news on in the evening, and yet it's coming from another world. If you live, you know, if this news is from one coast and you live on the other coast. You know, that's like me listening to, you know, Algeria's news.
Yeah.
So far away and so remote from your daily life. It's probably quite easy to think of it in these, like, you know, fantastical terms like this isn't really happening. But then I don't know, it must, like you say, you got the pickup truck, you know, the stickers and the guns. I mean, it must be quite okay. So even if, you know, the civil war isn't tomorrow, that still must be quite a scary like experience that for some people is daily. Yeah. And maybe I sympathize with this tendency to then glorify like some imagined opposition, you know,
right.
Like okay, well, these are my enemies, which might well be true. Who are my friends and who is going to defend me against these people? And then you're kind of on civil war thinking there, aren't you? Well, these are my guys, these are their guys. And there is violence, like I said, Aragon. This isn't completely, you know, people have died very recently. Although civil war is quite a leap, that's not to say that there isn't real violence there. And again, of the kind that there isn't really here.
Well, it is worth pausing and saying that we haven't actually answered the question of the topic of the week at all.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's also worth mentioning, the nature of how nasty people are and why. 30 years ago, I was more actively involved in the street fighting aspects of. Of the Antifa space. Yeah. And for my effort, I've had I was stabbed pretty intensely, nearly died back in the day. My good friend did die, and so of course I know about this violence intimately. And you know, in my case, it's meant ongoing surgeries throughout my life and will continue to. But to answer the question, how do we make it happen here?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I think we should have that as a goal for our lives here in this world, in the here and now. I don't think that we're ready, even if everything else were lined up. I honestly think that anarchists need a political education and, you know, It's a hard conversation to have, but basically, I think that if we in fact had something that looks like an American Civil War, and I had a guarantee that at the end of that war, anarchists were by and large going to be victorious, I'm not sure I'm fully satisfied that would look like a good thing for myself and other people.
It would if your imagination was so wild that the war itself looked like one of the computer games that you've been playing that particular week. If you have this experience, like I said, that you had all those years ago and happened, you know, again only a couple of weeks ago, If you had an idea of what the real experience of this kind of conflict would be, not even calling it a war, then yes, like you say, you would think you would think about it, wouldn't you? A lot of this just seems quite like it hasn't really been thought of beyond the very beginning. Like, okay, this is us, that is them, and now we are at war, and in a few months' time or a few years' time, we will win, you know. And then this magical thinking again, then there will be a utopia where everything is better. And yeah, if you think about it in those terms, then no, that you would want to make it happen here. And it would certainly seem, I mean, this is something else we could talk about. I mean, is the daily grind so unbearable in the US that you would rather live through a civil war of the kind that, I don't know, people in Syria or somewhere are living through? I mean, is that really something that you would want to make happen here?
Yeah, I mean, of course, this is dangerous because I don't want to fall into a trap of sort of becoming a conservative thinker as I get older.
No, I appreciate that. Sounds quite conservative.
I can hear that.
What I'm talking about really is a lack of thought rather than a lack of will or anything like that. I mean, where is in this topic of the week, for example, where is the real discussion about what this actually means, like what making it happen here means? I mean, maybe we could all think it through and it sounds, you know, and it still sounds like something that you would want to make happen. But there's none of that in the topic. There is some of that in the comments, by the way. If you go through the comments, there's some really interesting ideas about what this would actually mean. This has been a great response in terms of the comments. Some real back and forth, you know, rather than people just dropping in and putting in their two cents and then moving on, you've actually got a really interesting kind of conversation going on between a real variety of ideas.
Well, thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you.
This week's episode was sound edited by Greg. The What's New was written by Jackie and Greg, and read by Chisel and Greg. The reading is by Chisel from the PDF Phantasma number 3. And we thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week, Make It Happen Here. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material available at littleblackheart.com for news and by and or about anarchists, and up to the minute commentary, see you at anews.org or the Anarchist News IRC chat room, which is linked to on anews. Until love, yeah.